Okay, today's shir and every shir throughout the rest of the summer is sponsored by Ben and Yael Englander. It was chusur for Shalema for Zachariah Kalman and Yael Margalit. I just want to finish up the first packet before we move on to the second one. We gave the basic background information. I want to get into the halacha lemaisa tonight. Start getting into the halacha lemaisa tonight, but just a little bit more relating to the background information. We kept on discussing where the source of Tevilas Kelim is, the pesukim at the end of Parashas Matos, of course, and whether it's in fact those pesukim make it a din d'oraisa or it's only really a din d'rabbanan and it's an asmachta. We just spent a good deal of time discussing the shitas of Rambam, but we also discussed what the reason for Tevilas Kelim is, and we pointed out that the Ritva quotes from other Rishon, from the Yerushalmi and the Ramban, that there is this basic idea that the Kli enters into Kedushas Yisrael, and that when the Kli enters Kedushas Yisrael, much like when a person enters Kedushas Yisrael, they need to go to a mikveh. Kli has a similar thing. So the question is raised by Poskim, what about a person who actually enters Kedushas Yisrael? If a person is a non-Jew and then they convert, happens every single day, so they have a house full of Kelim. So obviously, when they have a house full of Kelim, they need to go and kasher all their Kelim. Very often they've already done that before they converted anyway, because they already start observing mitzvos, and they start wanting to observe kashrus in advance. They start observing many mitzvos. Obviously they can't observe Shabbos, but they're allowed to observe many other things. So very often they've already kashered their kelim anyhow, but now that they've become a Jew, these are kelim that they got from a non-Jew, namely themselves yesterday, who were non-Jewish. So do they need to now tovel all of the kelim in their house when they convert? So this is a major discussion in the poskim. The Darkei Tshuva quotes from the Chidrei Deya. If you look in source number 25, Darkei Tshuva, as we pointed out, was the Mooncatcher, and this compilation of all the various poskim that were many different svarim that had what to say on Yer Deya. So the Darkei Tshuva writes in the name of the Chidrei Deya, Lefi shetama tvila mishum sheyatzu mitumas goy l'kedushas Yisrael, lefi ze gam gershen esgar yir kelev tzrichim tvila. Why shouldn't it require tvila? Of course it should. There's no reason that it shouldn't require a tevila. They belong to a guy yesterday. They belong to a Jew today. So they require a tevila. Why should you say otherwise? Problem is, says the Chidrei Deya, v'lo matzinu ze b'shum duchta. We don't find anywhere that they actually do this. We don't know of any gerim who actually are then instructed to go and be tovel their kelim. So that's a big problem. Why doesn't it happen if it's so obvious that it should happen? So he suggests as a possibility, v'ulai demikal makom eino kemaisa shahaya, ratzalomer kemaisa dekli midyan shalom haya sham gerus, kiim b'derech kinyan melchamu zchiyah me'akum. He says it could be that kelim requiring tevila does not the mechayiv of tevila is not when something goes from a non-Jew's possession to a Jew's possession. The mechayiv of not only when something goes from a non-Jew's possession to a Jew's possession, the mechayiv of tevila might have to be refined and defined a little bit more than that. That the mechayiv of tevila is when something goes from a non-Jew's possession to a Jew's possession, derech kinyan, through a kinyan being made from one to the other. The source in the Torah for Tevilas Kelim is from the Melchama, going to fight a Melchama of Midian, and we go and we take their Kelim from them. That's Kinyan. We go and we acquire it. So we're koneh it from the Hefker after we defeat them in battle. That's Kinyan. So too, the Mechayev of Tevilas Kelim is only when the Kelim go into the possession of a Jew, Derech Kinyan. But not if it doesn't happen when it's not Derech Kinyan. If it happens in any way, aside from Derech Kinyan, even though it went from a guy to a Jew, maybe he says it doesn't require tevila, and he says v'tzarech iyun. I'm not sure. Maybe that's the svarim. I mean, he's trying to justify a minhag. He says that's the best I've got. That's the best I can come up with to try to justify that practice. So that is that's the suggestion of the Chidrei Deya. Now in the Sefer Tevilas Kelim, which again is we're going to be referring to it a lot, the Sefer Tevilas Kelim says that most poskim hold that you don't need to tovel kelim, and he quotes a whole series of poskim that all say you don't need. He quotes from there's a famous passage in the Shemi Shmuel. It's a famous passage in the Shemi Shmuel because the Shemi Shmuel doesn't frequently say things that are halach lemaisa. Shemi Shmuel was the son of the Avnei Nezer, the Sakachav Rebbe. So the Avnei Nezer was also Chasidish Rebbe. The Avnei Nezer and the Shemi Shmuel were both Chassidish rabbis in line in the same dynasty, the Sakachavar dynasty. The Avnei Nezer is most famous for his Egle Tal, and for the Avnei Nezer for all his halachic tshuvos. So the Avnei Nezer, everyone thinks of as an Adam Gadol Ba'alacha. Shemi Shmuel is known for his Chassidus, because he wrote the Sfarim Shemi Shmuel, which is all Chassidus. So the Avnei Nezer sometimes gets a little more love than the Shemi Shmuel, at least in my circles, a little more respect than the Shemi Shmuel, because he's more of a halachist, obviously. Now, the Shemi Shmuel was a great posek also, no doubt, and the Avnei Nezer was a great Chassidish Rabbi also. But that's just, it's just the Sfarim that they left behind. So there's one place in Shemi Shmuel where he quotes his father for a halacha, but he said, you know, it's in Shemi Shmuel and it's a halacha. It's b'shem his father, though. He says that b'shem his father, that a ger that's megayer doesn't require tevilas kelim, because the tevila of the ger is olef for his kelim. It's a very difficult svara to understand. The tevila of the ger himself works for his kelim. If it works for himself, it should work for his kelim. But the kelim weren't in the mikvah. It sounds like chasidus shavart lahalacha. So it's a very strange thing, very difficult thing to accept. So the sefer tevilas kelim in a very doesn't really judge the different shitos. Just says, look, there are a whole bunch of shitos that say that you require that you don't require tevilas kelim, including the Shemi Shmuel is a famous one. So it doesn't require tevilas kelim. Rav Shechter, I've heard from many times, he thought that the Shemi Shmuel was. He thought it was not something to be relied on in la halacha. He thought that, so what kind of svar is that? That if the tefillah of the guy works for the kelim, he didn't think that we should rely on that la halacha. It's a chassidus shavart. He didn't think that it should be relied on la halacha. But he said there were many poskim that although they required tefillah when a ger was megayer, they said do it without a bracha out of covenant for the Avnei Nezer. You know, the cover for the Avnei Nezer do without a bracha just means do without a bracha. Usually the best thing to do when you have a suffix tevila is to find something that vada is chayiv in tevila and will need a bracha, be tovel that with a bracha, and then be tovel everything else off of that same bracha. So it won't be a bracha levatala, bracha shein sricha. You'll make one bracha on the thing that vada needs tevila, and then you'll go and you'll tovel everything. So apparently, I don't know if that's the minhag. I'm not involved in Geirus in any way, but Rav Shechter, that's certainly what Rav Shechter advises people to do, to be tovel their kelim once they're megayer, and get another kli, make a bracha on it, but they can buy a new kli after they're megayer, make a bracha on that, and while they're there, be tovel all the kelim. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is why? What? No, he thought he didn't understand why not. Meaning, as far as Nosenes, it belonged to a guy yesterday, belongs to a Jew today, that it should require tevila. He didn't understand why you wouldn't say that it should require tevila. I thought the Chedrei Deya had the best svara. That the problem is you need a raya for that. Meaning he says, look at the source. The source of Tevilas Kelim is from a Melchama where we were Kona it. Where it was Derech Kinyan. That sounds like much more of a halachic type of a svara. Apparently the Mechayiv of Tevilas Kelim is only when it's Derech Kinyan. The problem with relying on that and saying that you therefore don't have to tovel any of the Kelim is that even the Chedrei Deya wasn't sure about the svara. He said, you know, Misvara, they really should require Tevilas Kelim. They don't, so okay, I'll fetch out a svara. And he leaves it as a tzarachin. Tzitz Eliezer gets all upset that the Chedrei Deya is misquoted by the Darkei Tshuva. Tzitz Eliezer, if you look in source number 30, he says, look in Darkei Tshuva, quotes from the Chedrei Deya on Yoredeya, that Shekvar Omer HaMechor B'zeh, Dinira Digershin Eskari, Kol Kelov Tzrichim Tevila. V'iniach B'tzarachin, he says, the Chedrei Deya comes to the Maskana that you do need Tevila, according to the Darkei Tshuva, and he leaves it as a tzarachin, why people don't do it. But the Tzitz Eliezer gets all upset. He said that's a total misquotation of the Chedrei Deya. He never said that. He never said that the real Ikar HaDin is that you do need Tevila. What he said, the way we read it and the way we said it over before is the way it's presented in Darkei Tshuva. He said Darkei Tshuva totally messed up over there. That's not the way he said it. The way the Chedrei Deya said it is that really you don't need Tevila. That's the way he was really leaning at the end. Because after all, he had this beautiful Svara to learn from the Melchama that it's got to be Derech Kinyan. So the Tzitz Eliezer gets all upset with the Darkei Tshuva that he misquoted this passage. Now again, you have to keep in mind, as we've said before, how the Darkei Tshuva was written. It was written by many different people of many different levels. It was just the project was overseen by the Munkacha Rebbe, but the Munkacha wasn't writing everything. He had all the Talmidim in the Yeshiva working on it. So he edited everything, he read everything, but probably didn't fact check every single maramakom, right, to look up, make sure that every single one was exactly quoted exactly precisely correctly. So yeah, it's very possible that, I mean, it's possible the Munkach Rebbe could have made a mistake also, but it's even more possible that his Talmidim could have made these mistakes. Yeah.
According to the Ezer, how does he explain Sarach Iyun?
So he writes, he says, look at the Lashon in source number 30 in the second paragraph there. He says, he explains it word for word. He says, he's not machria that they do need tvila, elu b'derech shel tzarechiyun. Since the whole idea is that it leaves Tumas Akum, it's Tzarechiyun because Deim Kain Gam Gershen is Gari Yeh Kelev Tzrichim Tvila. Meaning Tzarechiyun as a kasha, why doesn't it need V'lo Matzina Zom B'Shem Duchta? But we know that it doesn't because no one does it. And not only is he not machriya that it does need, he then comes up with a svara to explain why it doesn't need. So the tzarachiyun is, it was a tzarachiyun on why our minhag is what it is, but then he's mekayim the minhag, and he says it's the right thing to not do tevilas kelim because of that svara. So again, the sefer tevilas kelim thinks that the standard shita is that you don't do tevilas kelim. Rav Shechter thought that was an off-the-wall shita. He thought the standard shita is that you do tevilas kelim when a person is megayir. Again, I'm not involved in gerus. I don't know what typically they are advised to do or not to do. The Chidrei Deya Svara works very well in terms of a major kasha. A lot of the Achronim ask, the Jews after Matan Torah, why didn't they do Tefillas Kelim then? They went from being non-Jews to being Jews, right? That was a mass gerus at Matan Torah. That's when they. So why didn't they do Tefillas Kelim then? So Tzitz Eliezer points out that that's not really, or someone points out that that's not really necessarily the greatest kasha in the world, because the idea is that it goes mitum l'tara. The Jewish people prior to Matan Torah may not have been, because there was no Jewish nation, other nation that was Nam Kadosh, and it was Nam Nivchar before them, and they weren't on the outs, and therefore it's not going to be called going from Tumah to Tahara. But according to the Chidrei Deya Svara, it's also very good. Why would they not need Tevilas Kelim? There's no Kinyan. It was in their possession the entire time. Wouldn't require Tevilas Kelim. This does not help, by the way, for the Chametz issue. Right, every year when we sell chametz, so people always ask when they're selling the chametz, I'm selling you my kelim. I always tell them, no, you're not selling your kelim. First of all, you're not selling me anything. I'm just your shliach to sell it to John Brown. But second of all, you're not selling your kelim. Why are you not selling your kelim to John Brown? Because if you buy your kelim back from John Brown after Pesach, you need tefilas kelim and all your kelim because you just bought them from a guy. Right, so you might say, well, it didn't transfer. There was no kinyan. There wasn't there a kinyan. It was in my garage the whole time, covered with some garbage bags or something, with some sheets. So it was. So it didn't leave my possession. Maybe it doesn't require tefillah for that reason. It doesn't help over here because you know how many kinyanim we actually do on everything that you're selling with the guy and buying back. There's plenty of kinyanim that are being done. It's definitely derech kinyan. It's about as derech kinyan as you get. It's as much of a business deal as any business deal you'll ever be a part of, you'll ever see when we do the mechiras chametz. So this svara will not help for that issue. The other question that people deal with is non. What if you buy kelim from non-frum Jews? Now, if I buy a kli from a non-frum Jew who himself bought it from a guy, and I know the non-frum Jew didn't do tefilas kelim, so then it's a no-brainer. Obviously, I need to do tefilas kelim. What if the non-frum Jew made the kli on a kibbutz somewhere and they make kelim, and I buy it from a non-frum Jew? Is there any idea of, if the whole idea of tefilas kelim is that it goes from tuma to tahara, from tuma to kedusha, that when it's in the hands of min and apikores or whatever, assuming that the particular non-frum Jew you're buying it from has a din of a min or apikores, is it possible that you'll require tevilas kelim in that situation? So the Darkei Tshuva quotes from a Tshura Shai that you do need tevilas kelim in that situation, which is also just a wild chiddush. The Avni Nezer says no, it doesn't work, and he says I'll tell you why it doesn't work. Avni Nezer writes in the Tshuva, it's in source number 27 in Yardeya Simen Kuf Tes. He says a mumar is a very complicated category in halacha. Someone who's an apikoros, a mumar, what is he? Is he a guy in halacha? We don't count him toward a minion, right? We discussed that once, I think. Is he a Jew? What exactly is he? If he marries a Jew, the kiddushin is tofsin, right? Doesn't have a din of a guy. So what exactly is he? What do we do with a mumar? How do we identify? How do we categorize him? So he writes that yesh bo shnei hadinim. Dino ki Yisrael. On the one hand, he's like Yisrael, the gabi kiddushin, and become a devarim afal pishachati Yisrael. Who we say that even if a person sins, he's still a Jew, and at the same time, dino kigoy. If he's baal amumeres, kanoim pogimbo. If a person, a guy, is baal amumeres, kanoim pogimbo, as if he was baal alagai, even as if he was baal alagaya, it would be kanoim pogimbo. So he says klal shel davar. Here's the bottom line rule. We just treat him l'chumra for everything. If being a Jew is a chumra, he's a Jew. If being a non-Jew is a chumra, he's a non-Jew. Whatever the chumra is, that's what we'll do. So says Yavin Nezer, okay, so if that's the rule, let's think about it for a second. When a mumar buys a kli from a guy, he should need to do tevilas kelim. Right? When he buys a kli from a guy, because l'chumra, we should treat him l'chumra. When you buy a kli from a mumar, you should need to do tefilas kelim. That's what logic would dictate. The Avnei Nezer says it's not so. The second part is true. When you buy a kli from a mumar, he says you should do tefilas kelim. You should in fact do tefilas kelim because you're bringing it from tumah to kedusha, and we treat him l'chumra like a guy. When a mumar buys a kli from a non-Jew, and he wants. And for whatever reason, he doesn't believe in God, but he likes rituals such as Tevilas Kelim. So he wants to do Tevilas Kelim. Half of the firm world doesn't even know about Tevilas Kelim, but the Mumar, he decides that it's going to be his mitzvah. So he wants to do Tevilas Kelim. So the Abnezer says, and let's say he does it, and then you buy the Kli from him. Can you say, look, if my friend buys something and does Tevilas Kelim and uses the Kli and everything, and then I buy it from him used, I don't have to do new tefilas kelim. What if the mumar bought it, did tefilas kelim, used it, and then I bought it from him? Says the Avnei Nezer, now I need to do my own tefilas kelim. His tefilas kelim didn't work. Why doesn't his tefilas kelim work? So he says his tefilas kelim doesn't work, not because he didn't need to do it. He did need to do it. We treat him l'chumra like a Jew. He needed to, but it doesn't work when he does it. Because the whole idea of tefilas kelim is that you're bringing it from tumah to kedusha. He's bringing it from Tumah to Vayter Tumah. So it's going to be more Tumah. So the whole Tevilah is not Olalo. It doesn't work for him when he tries to do the Tevilas Kelim. So if it doesn't work for him, when you then go and buy it from him, he could say, yeah, I tivled it. That's fine. I believe you that you tivled it, but it doesn't work. And therefore, I need to tivle it again when I take possession of it from the Mumar. That's the Chiddush of the Avnei Nezer. But either way, he seems to be pretty strong that a kli purchased from a mumar does require tevilas kelim. This is not agreed upon by everybody. Rav Moshe, in a tshuva in the Aruch Chaim Chel Gimel Siman Dalid, writes about kelim that are made in a factory. So what do you assume? I don't know who owns the company that I bought, you know, the kelim from. I don't know if it was made by a Jew or a non-Jew. How am I supposed to know who made it? Can I assume maybe the kelim that I bought, was made by a Jew, and therefore maybe I don't have to do tefillas kelim in anything? Is that a sniff lahakel? Right, if you're at someone's house and they say, my son came back from Israel recently, he came back with this crazy chumra called tefillas kelim. We're never tovel anything. I don't know what he was talking about. And you're sitting there with your fork and knife and, so what do you do then, right? So can you say, well, who knows? Maybe this German-made, kelim. Maybe it was a Jew. Maybe it was it was made by a Jew. Maybe it wasn't made by a non-Jew. Can you use that as a sniff lahakel? Says Rav Moshe, absolutely not. He says not absolutely not, mostly not. He says Jews are muta de muta. We're very. He says certainly stuff made in China, made in Japan, forget about. And maybe in Europe even, he says, we're a muta de muta. And he says, what about those that come from Eretz Yisrael? Kelim that come from Eretz Yisrael. So he says, that which comes from Eretz Yisrael doesn't need tefillah at all. Ki kulam shel Yisrael. Va'af im mi factory shel avaryonim u'mechalele shabbosos, nami ein saruch tefillah. What if it's made by avaryonim u'mechalele shabbos, people who are chilonim, who don't believe in anything, who aren't observant or anti-religious, whatever, doesn't matter, does not require tefillah. So basically, Rav Moshe says against the Avnei Nezer that when you buy from a mumar, you would not have to do tefillas kelim. I think that's the assumption that we normally have, that when you buy Israeli kelim, Israeli owned companies, you don't have to check into the frumkeit of the guy who owns the company. You can assume that since he's a Jew, it does not require tefillas kelim. Now, what about a bal tshuva?
Does it go by the owner or by the maker?
Probably by the owner.
Is it because there's like a chazaka in Israel and mostly Jewish? Because
there are
Arabs, there are plenty of...
Yeah, although the demographics are unfortunately changing pretty quickly, but that's... Okay, what about a bal tshuva? So the Tzitz Eliezer quotes from the Chassam Sofer that there is a minhag that when a person becomes a bal tshuva, that he goes to the mikveh. So shaila is, if the person himself goes to the mikveh when he becomes a bal tshuva, not only if he becomes a chassid, even if he just stam, becomes a regular bal tshuva, he goes to the mikveh, not because he's going to be going every day, just stam that one time, he goes to the mikveh. So why would he, so if you're going to say that that's called going from kedusha, from tumah to kedusha, in the sense that he has to go to the mikveh, and we compare tvilas kalim to tvilas ager, and the bal tshuva does a little bit of a tvilas ager, so should we say that the kalim should also do a little bit of a tvilas ager? So he quotes from the Chassam Sofer that no, that we wouldn't go that far. The Rama in Yeridaya quotes it. This is in Shulchan Aruch, this idea of a bal tshuva going to the mikvah. The Rama in Hilchos Gerim, Simon Reish Samaches, if Yud Beis, writes Yisrael Mumar Sha'asa Tshuva Ain Sarich Litval Rak Mitarabanon Yesh Lo Litval L'Kabal of Divrei Chaveros B'fnei Gimel. He says really he doesn't need to do tefillah, but Mitarabanon he should do tefillah. It says Chassam Sofer, since it's not Maker Adin, we're definitely not going to say that there's this real idea of going from Tumah to Kedusha that's going to carry over to the Kalim. And therefore, a Bal Tshuva, certainly his Kalim, do not require Tefillah. Okay, so that's just going back on the original idea that we were discussing about the idea of Tefillah's Kalim being going from Tumah to Kedusha. Now we're going to move into some Halach L'maisa Inyanim. Now let's move on to today's Mar Makomos. I have to say, when I made up these Mar Makomos this afternoon, I did not have my Sefer Tevilas Kelim with me. I left it in Yeshiva over the weekend, so I apologize if they're incomplete. It's a big topic, so I don't know. If they would have been complete, it would have been probably too overwhelming anyway. The concept I want to discuss tonight is really one line in the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah asks, well, if you need to do tevila on kelim, so what about a zuga de sarvula, right? Is that what it was called? Why don't you do kelim on scissors, why don't you do tevila's kelim on an iPod or on any other kli that you buy, your chair, a couch? You should do tevila's kelim on all kelim. So Gemara says, no, kli su'uda. You don't do tevila's kelim on any kli you buy from a guy, only you don't do tevila's kelim on your car, your any of that stuff, only kli su'uda. Only those kelim that are klei su'uda. So the exact definition of klei su'uda is something that we're going to have to spend some time on. Basically, what I want to discuss with you are seven issues relating to klei su'uda. Meaning, lamashal, if you want to get, if you want to think about what is and is not klei su'uda. So a serving tray, everyone would assume probably is klei su'uda. That's brought to the table and you serve with. What about a cup holder in your car? Let's assume you have a really fancy car and it's not made of plastic. So is that klei su'uda? Because it's holding your breakfast, which is coffee, every day. So klei su'uda? So probably not. Intuitively, we would say you don't have to be tovel your car or unscrew your cup holder and be tovel that. Right? So how do we define, how are we magdir klei su'uda? So we're going to be magdir it through a discussion of seven issues. The seven issues, just to run them down in advance to let you know what to expect, are number one, storage kelim. Is that klei su'uda when you use it just to store things but you don't use it actually during the meal? Number two, kelim that never actually touch food, but they are used in terms of preparing food, but they never actually touch food. Number three, kelim that were made maybe to be able to be used for food, but you're using them for other purposes, or vice versa. They're made for other purposes, but you decide that since you're camping or hiking or whatever, you want to use them for food. Number four, kelim that are not used during a meal, but are used during the preparation of a meal. and how far back the preparation has to go in order for it to be too far removed to not be clay suda. Number five, if the kli doesn't really do anything, you use it during a meal, it touches food, but it doesn't really do that much, doesn't really help that much, so would that still be considered clay suda? Number six, if the kli is a package, it's a packaging that the food comes in, like a Snapple bottle, right? That's the classic Snapple bottle shayla. It's just the packaging of the kli. Would you say that that's a clay suda or that's clay packaging? That's some other type of kli. And finally, number seven that we're going to discuss is what if it's not clay suda for you because you're using it for the restaurant that you own, for the hotel that you own, for your business. For you, it's clay schora. Now, the kli is clearly made to be used during a suda. I just happen to own, let's say, the mashal, I happen to own O'Nuts. I don't, unfortunately. But let's say I happen to own O'Nuts on Central Avenue, candy store. I have all these dishes. The dishes were clearly made to be used during a suda. I'm never going to use them during a suda. I'm just going to package nice candies in there, and people will spend $30 to give Shabbos gifts to other people. And I'll be happy sipping martinis somewhere else. But the point is that it's not clay suda for me. It's clay suda for whoever's going to end up using it. So those are the seven issues. Let's go one by one. The first one is a pretty short and direct one. Storage kelim. Kelim that you mamish never bring to the table. For instance, the bin that you keep flour in, you know, that you would use to bake. Flour, F-L-O-U-R, right? The bin that you would keep a lot of sugar in, you know, baking products, things like that. Things that are clearly there for storage alone. Would that require tevila? So there, Rabbi Kiva Eger has a kasha, and based on how you answer the kasha, we would determine what we would hold about these types of bins. Now, again, keep in mind, I'm assuming everything's metal. Let's just assume everything's either metal or glass now. Let's assume we have no shilas in terms of the chomer, what the kli is made out of. We're going to get to that next. Once we finish clay suda, we'll then discuss different, you know, materials that kelim might be made out of and whether those require tefillah or not. And then we'll move on to electrical kelim and whether they require tefillah, how to do it, what the other etzes are, if there are any heterim. So let's just assume for now nothing has electricity and everything is either glass or metal. Okay? And we're just going to determine based on function, based on what they do, are they clay suda or not. So Rabbi Kiva Eger's kasha is as follows. Rabbi Kiva Eger, in his parish on Shulchan Aruch, right at the very beginning of Simen Kuf Chaf, which is the Simen about Tevilas Kelim, of course, in source number two, he says, "Beknesa Gdola Kasav v'yeshlach karhani chavios didon shel cheres gedolos hametsupos be'ever shemasim behem yayin be'ez mikva yatvil." Meaning, basically, many of the kashas that we have start off with, why is our minhag again not to do tevila on this, that, or the other thing? So he says, we have these huge barrels that are made out of cheres. Now, cheres doesn't require tevila, but he says it's mitsupas, it's lined with lead, which is a metal, does require tevila. So he says since it's lined with lead, it would require tevila. These kelim are made out of, like we said, we're assuming metal or glass. But they're huge, he said. You can't fit them in a keli mikvah. So what do we do with these kelim? How do we deal with that? There's no way anyone ever tovels them because you can't even fit them in a keli mikvah. He's obviously not just talking about a container that holds some flour. He's talking about a huge thing that won't fit in a mikvah. So he says two possible terutzim, and depending which terutz you hold is going to make a big difference. He says, first I found matzasi b'tshuvas k'sav yad la'chacham ma'ari ze'evi. I don't know who that is. De'ein takana kiyam al yidei ha'arama l'sitam lovik chavim b'matanu l'ashilam imenu. That the only takana you could have is give it as a gift to a guy and borrow it back from him. Now that works, to give it as a gift. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that idea once in Simen Kuf Chav. He talks about it if it's Erev Shabbos and you don't have time to go to the Keli Mikvah, but you really need the Kli for Shabbos. So he says, to get you through Shabbos, you could be makne to a guy and borrow it from him through Shabbos. The Shaila, and that's what a lot of the posts we'll see later suggest to do with electric appliances. That be makne to a guy and then borrow it back from him. Now, the problem with that is, where the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, it's to get you through Shabbos. It's like a stopgap for a day. Would he be happy about that applying forever, to use that for that kula forever with a kli? Now, we did point out that There is no one-time heter anyway with kelim, so why should it be any different? But still, it seems that it should be a little bit different. To make the leap from a one-day stopgap to saying you could use it forever in that way is a little bit of a jump, but that's where Rabbi Akiva quotes, that maybe that's the heter, that the heter is only that you got to be makne to a guy. But then he says, he quotes from someone else, a different etza. Not etza, a different reason why they're not tovel. He says, V'kasav alav ha-chacham ma'arim yelidazal, de'lo nira de'ein sarach tvila, de'davka klei su'uda ba'i tvila, ve'elo ha-chavios einon rak k'dei la-hachnas be'em ha-yayin l'kiyum, this can be more rabbo. It's not klei su'uda. These aren't meant as klei su'uda, they're meant to keep wine for a long time. It's clay otsar and not clay su'uda. Problem is, he says, the entire Yoredeya is based on a sefer that we've been quoting a lot over the summer, Isser Veheter. It's quoted all over the place, in the Shach, and the Ta'a, everyone quotes the Isser Veheter, the Ramah. It's on every page in Shulchan Aruch, the Isser Veheter. The Isser Veheter was a sefer written by Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, not Rabbeinu Yonah Migrona, the one who wrote the Shari Tshuva, a different Rabbeinu Yonah. Right? Rabbeinu Yonah wrote the Isser V'Heter. He says, so the most authoritative work on Yoredeya is the Isser V'Heter. So what does the Isser V'Heter have to say about this? So the Isser V'Heter spoke about kelim that are large kelim made out of metal that you keep wine in for a long time, and the Isser V'Heter says, needs tvila. So Rabbi Kivega says, I thought it was a brilliant teretz, you know, not clay su'uda, it's clay otzar. Problem is, it's against the Isser V'Heter, and you can't go against the Isser V'Heter so easily in Yoredeya. So he says, but maybe it's not against the Isser V'Heter, he says. The difference is, I was talking about a case, says Rabbi Kivega, where the kelim were made out of, now we got to pay attention to what they were made out of, where the kelim were really primarily klicheres. It just had some metal supporting it. So we happen to paskin that requires tevila, but there are many rishonim that hold that would not require tevila. And that's where I'm going to say that I'll rely on a svara that it's not clay su'uda, it's clay otsar, in combination with the fact that there are many rishonim that hold that kelim made out of that material don't need tefillah in the first place. But Rabbeinu Yonah in Isser V'Heter was talking about a kli that was made out of metal. So the only tzad l'kula you have is the fact that it's not clay su'uda. That's not enough. It's not enough to rely on it by itself. You need another tzad lahakel in order to combine it, in order to rely on it. That's what Rabbi Kivega suggests. So that's Rabbi Kivega's suggestion. But the idea that he puts out there, that kelim that are made for storage, now, based on this Rabbi Kivega alone, you wouldn't say, oh, storage, okay, you're good to go. Because he's very misupak about it. He says you can only rely on it if you have some other tzad lahakel. But nevertheless, later poskim were much more open to relying on it, to relying on this idea. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about large iron cast pots that were like attached to the oven, that you would just like they would never be removed from the oven. And he says, you know, but they were, before they were put attached to the oven, they were metaltalin. So why don't we do tefillas kelim on that? So he discusses two possibilities. Number one, that maybe it's just too big, it's not metaltal noli verekam, whatever, it's just considered too big to be considered even a kli. But then he says, really, the point is that they're considered clay otsar, that anything that's considered clay otsar, anything that's considered to be a kli that you store something in for a long time and is not meant to be used and brought to the table. Now again, clay suda doesn't only mean brought to the table. Clay suda, there are two definitions, really, of what it means, clay suda. There's brought, used during the meal and used during meal preparation. But these clay otsar aren't actually used. They're not kept around the meal preparation stuff. They're just put away somewhere else. Now, if you're going to use that definition, then probably the things in our kitchen are not clay otsar. The buckets that are like, or the bins that are like this big, that are probably not clay otsar. They're like a foot tall, whatever. These poskim are talking about things that are much, much bigger, where you have in the garage or in like some storage place these massive kelim of flour, and you would take your bucket or your whatever you call it, your container, and you would scoop out some flour from that. So the big kli would be clay otsar, but if you're going to bring it to the to the cooking area while you're cooking, and that's what you're going to be using while you're cooking, it's very possible that it's not, that it does not have a din of clay outside. So this is a major issue in the poskim. Generally speaking, it's not much of a shaila anyway, because most people's kalim that they use for this stuff is plastic nowadays. So generally speaking, it's not much of a shaila. But if you taka do have a glass or a metal one, I would guess that the poskim would say be tovel without a bracha. I was just in the Far Rockaway Kelim Mikvah today. They have Rabbi Forst's class and tag, learned Tefillas Kelim for like 2 years or something. And they put up, very specific instructions, what needs Tefillah, with a bracha, without a bracha, explanations, very nice. I didn't see what Rabbi Forst has to say about such bins, containers, but yesh v'yesh. There's deos in the poskim to say either way. The stomach Tefillah without a bracha is always the safest, if it's in fact made out of glass or metal. Okay. Let's move on to the next clay su'uda. Yeah?
I guess like salt shakers and pepper shakers.
That you use even during the meal.
It's not used in preparation, though.
It's even stronger. I mean, you use it during the actual meal itself.
You said that it has to have those.
One or the other. Either during the su'uda or during the preparation for the su'uda. Yes, the salt shakers, pepper shakers should require tefillah. Yeah, I got a fancy knife that has a salt shaker that comes out of the bottom of the knife, and I toveled it and killed the whole thing because like all the salt keeps getting wet now because it's whatever. But yeah, that does require to be less scalable. You didn't really need to know that. That does require to be less scalable. Okay, moving along. The next major kula major issue relating to clay suda is what about kalim that never directly touch the food? For instance, the racks in your oven, the grates on top of your stove. You always, when you use your oven, you don't put food directly on the oven racks. If you do, your mother will kill you. You put a pot on the oven rack, you put a pot on the stovetop, you don't put food directly on the fire on the stovetop. Right? Things that don't always, that's why people sometimes get confused. They say, well, if the racks in my oven don't require tefillah, then the racks in my grill shouldn't require tefillah either. But that's incorrect. Right, the racks on your grill are very different than the racks in the oven. The grates on the grill, on the barbecue, touch the food directly. The grates in the oven, the racks in the oven, do not touch the food directly. Very, very big difference. But so what's the status of all of these items? And for that matter, somewhere in between would be the glass turntable of the microwave. Does that touch food directly? Does not touch food directly. So it probably depends what you're putting in at what point. Like if you just want to warm up, a Danish or something to make it soft, so you might not put it. You might just put it on a paper towel in the, you wouldn't put it hopefully directly on the glass plate, but you might put it on a paper towel or something and not on a plate. Is that called that it touches food directly, not touches? Okay, so we have a lot to talk about here. It all starts with the Shulchan Aruch. Started with Rishonim, but we're going to start with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch in Sif Dalid, in Simon Kuf Chav, writes in source number 4, tripod, which the Achronim point out is translated as tripods, meaning things that have three legs, right? A tripod, Sheshovs Maleim Kederos, that they would rest a pot on top of. So they'd have this this thing that had three legs, like a tripod, and they would have a fire underneath it, and you put the pot on top of it, on top of the tripod. Einam tunos tevila, would not require tevila. Aval pediliash tuunos tevila. What's a pediliash? I don't know, but there's one thing I do know about it. The difference between tripod and pediliash is that tripods you don't put the food on directly. Pediliash you do put the food on directly. So that which you put the food on directly requires tevila. That which you don't put the food on directly does not require tevila. That's very clear in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what's interesting is this tripod or tripods, whatever, however he wants to say it, that he says do not require tevila. If you look in Hilchos Pesach, when the Mechaber and the Ramah discuss hechsher kelim, kashering kelim, so they talk about this kli also. It says kelim shemesham shemelay deyar gon shvudim askalos chiyotz v'em tzrichim libun v'aliben atshi nisosin tazmeim. It describes how to do libun, and then he says, Chatsuva, at the very end, Rama writes Chatsuva Tsarich Libun. And all the Achronim explain Chatsuva is tripods. But Chatsuva needs to be kashered. So asks everybody, if it never touches food, why would it need to be kashered? Just identifying this kli. What is it? If it never touches food, why would you ever have to kasher it? So as the Mishnah Berurah says, no, it's some, and the answer is going to be instructive for us. Mishnah Berurah says that it's something that doesn't normally touch food, but food very often or sometimes will spill over on it, and therefore will become balua in it, or other the way other acharim say, you'll sometimes use it directly with food, most of the time not. So if you're going to say, if depending on how you answer this question, it's going to be a big difference. What if you have kalim that usually don't touch food? But every once in a while, you put food on directly. Take the glass turntable of the microwave. Does that require tefillah or not? So if it's something that never ever touches food and it's only spills, so then everyone would agree it would not require tefillah's kalim. It might need to be kashered because there are spills sometimes, and therefore some the tam of whatever you had in there gets into the kli. But it won't require tefillah's kalim, because tefillah's kalim is nikva based on how it's used. But if you hold that the reason the tripods don't require tefillah's kalim is not because it's never used with food directly, but it's not usually used with food directly, then it will turn out if you hold of that answer, the glass turntable things in the microwave should not require tefillah's kalim. So again, if you hold it's never used directly with food, the glass turntable in the microwave should require tefillah. If you hold that it's just not usually used directly with the food, and that's why it doesn't need tefillah, then the glass turntable also wouldn't need tefillah. So it's a major discussion. So how does the Mishnah Berurah say? Which way does the Mishnah Berurah say? He says, he says sometimes that it spills, and since sometimes it spills, right, that's the only issue. But rove may not be enough of a koveya if it's used. We'll see. We'll get to rove and meat a little bit later. Let's actually leave that aside for now. But anyway, that's so. What's a very very good example of something that never touches the food? A trivet that you would put on the table. You don't want to burn the plastic tablecloth, right? So you put a trivet under the pot, so it never touches food directly. It could be made out of metal, sometimes made out of wood, out of different things, but wood doesn't need tefillah anyway. But if it were made out of metal, so it would not require tefillah because it never in fact touches the food. Let me discuss rove for a second about whether we follow rove tashmisho. I want to know if I use it most of the time for touching food, for not touching food directly, is that enough to say it does not require tefillas kalim, even if there's a mira matzah, there's a significant minority of the time that I will use it directly with food. Let's take the microwave because it's very nogea. The microwave, for those microwaves that have a glass plate in it. So does it or does not require tefillah? So this is a prichadash that says that we follow rov tashmish for tefillah's kelim. However, it seems to be against the Ramah. The Ramah in Sifches seems to not assume that way. If you look at the Ramah in Sifches, the Shulchan Aruch over there is talking about a Jew who borrows a kli from a guy. He says, Yesh misha omer. The Shulchan Aruch says, Im lo lacha rishon letzaruch suda el lachtoch klafim. If the kli was purchased to cut klaf, to cut parchments, it wasn't meant to be used for a suda, then you don't need to be tovel it. Says the Rama. But you're not allowed to use it even for once in a while for a suda purpose without tevila. So what's Rama telling you? Primarily, what's this kli used for? Cutting parchment. Once in a while, I have a pocket knife, let's say, right, a Swiss Army knife that I use primarily because I'm a Boy Scout and I don't know what I do with it. I have no idea what they do with it. I cut wood or whatever. I don't know, but I'm not cutting. I'm not having my meal with it. I'm not sitting down with the fork and the knife in it, you know, and having a meal with the Swiss Army knife. But once in a while, you might use it that way. So says the Rama, you need tevila. You can't use it without tevilas kalim. So the Rama seems against the Prichadash on this issue, whether you'd be able to follow Rov Tashmisho or not. And therefore, it would seem that according to the Rama, that glass turntable in the glass plate in the microwave, l'chaura, if you ever use it directly with food, or it's made to be used directly with food, should require tefillah. A nutcracker is a big discussion in the poskim, which, you know, I don't know how often we use nowadays, but it used to be people would like to eat nuts and they would have to... They'd have these. You ever see one even?
Yeah.
could have his metal, yeah, the crack nuts. Okay, so a nutcracker, does it require tevila or not? So new, what would you say? What does it touch? It touches the shell. So Pashtus is, you would say it does not require tevila. Rav Vazna writes in the Tshuva, doesn't require tefillah, touches the shell, doesn't touch the food. He says, you want to be tovel it without a bracha. That's always the answer, right? But he says he doesn't think it really requires tefillah, doesn't see why it should require tefillah. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach quoted in Sefer Tevilas Kelim, tefillah with a bracha on the nutcracker. Why? Why tefillah with a bracha? So he says, because the shell is also considered part of the food in this, because you, when you serve the nuts, you bring it to the table with the shell on. So it's considered part of the food. That's, I don't know, when you bring a challah to the table, you bring it with the kli that's around it also. I mean, that's not part of the food, it's a separate, but the shell isn't a kli, it's part of the food, it's the shomer apri, so it's considered part of the pri, it's not considered a separate kli, and therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks it does require to be killed. Yeah. It's not being eaten, but it's still nevertheless, right, that's the svara to say that it shouldn't require, that the nutcracker shouldn't require tefillah kelim because it's only touching the inedible part. Or some Zalman said it's still part enough of the pri because it grows with it, it's connected to it, that it's considered that it touches the food, even though it's not touching the edible part of the food. Yeah?
Apparently a nutcracker takes a certain amount of skill because every time I use one, it just goes right through the nut. So
it does touch the food, you say. It always touches the food. Yeah, but it's not, I mean, if I'm just a slob and I leave my iPod on my kitchen table while I'm eating and it happens to touch my food all the time, I don't need to then tovel my iPod. It's not something that touch. It would have to do something, you know, have some sort of, it's not when it's unfortunate that it touched the food. It would have to be something that you want to use it with the food. What about pot covers, coverings of pots? So it doesn't touch the food per se. The Rama writes in Sif Hei, it depends whether it's necessary for the food or not. Meaning, if you have a covered soup pot, a chalent pot, so you can't make soup or chalent without the cover, without the lid, because otherwise it will just evaporate and you won't have a soup anymore. Right, but if it's just, let's say, the cookie jar cover, the cover of the cookie jar, so it's just there to make sure nothing falls into it. It's not really helping the cookies per se. It's just protecting it from the outside elements. Yeah. So he thinks that, so the Rama says, in that kind of case, the chara should not require tefillas kelim. Again, assuming the cookie jar is made out of glass or plastic or something like that. Now, what's the svara? What's the svara for the seta? And this is very critical because people often ask, so I have a kli that hasn't been toveled yet. I really want to use it. Can I just put a napkin down or something? Or a doily or something on the kli, and I'll put the danishes or whatever it is that I'm serving on top of that, the candy, and that way it won't actually be touching the kli. Does that help also? When we say if it doesn't touch the kli, if I'm going to use it with a hefsek mappa, I'll just put a napkin down. Is that going to be good enough? I had a major issue with this. We had a, I noticed that the candy stores, mentioned O'Nuts before, that a lot of the local candy stores, they'd sell glass kelim that have candy in it already, right? And not just the wicker and the plastic ones, which are not a problem, but glass and or metal ones even that had candy in it already. You'd bring it to somebody's house, and what would they do? They wouldn't empty it out, bring it to the mikveh, and then refill it before serving it. They would you use it. You bring it out to the table. But tevilas kelim has never done it. So someone said, okay, but what are we going to tell them? How can we tell them not to do it? That's their whole business. What are we going to tell them? So is there any eitza? So someone said, okay, what if they package it in a way where there's a hafsik mappa, where they put a doily or something down, just something to, you know, be mafsik between the plate and the food. Is that good enough? Is the hafsik mappa good enough? So let's analyze for a second. What's the reason why a kli that never touches the food is not going to, just one second, what's the reason why a kli that never touches the food is not going to require tevilas kelim? So it seems that there are two deos. If you look in the Bir Agra, in Sif Katan Yud, he quotes one opinion in source number 10. He writes, on the tripods issue, he quotes a Rashba. The Rashba says, when the Gemara says that you dafka need klei suda, the Rashba says, dichsiv kol asher yavo be'esh taviro be'esh, Eze davar sheba be'esh tzarech lachshiro be'esh. Ze klei suda sheboleya. Rashba says, definition of klei suda, something that could be baleya, that could have tam transfer from the food that's inside of it. I sometimes use kalim only for cold. Yeah, but if it were hot, tam would transfer. I mean, the point is, it has the potential for blia. Anything that has the potential for blia would require tefilas kalim. That's called klei suda. That's how the Gras says. Now, Beis Yosef just quotes Shitas Rashi. Rashi doesn't read the Gemara that has anything to do with blia. Right, Rashi says, called Avar Asher Yava Be'esh, Ve'in Derech L'shtamish Be'esh, Ela Kelim Shel Tzar Chesuda. Just more generally, the minhag is, you only use, associated with fire, you would only use Klei Su'uda. You wouldn't use your iPod associated with fire. You'd only use Klei Su'uda kinds of Kelim. So, the Rashi holds it's totally in the Bliya, and Rashi says, no, it's just a general type of Kli that would be used around the Su'uda. That's the Machlokas Rishonim, how to define Klei Su'uda over here. Now, according to either one, I think, it would come out that a Hefsek Mappa should not work. Right? Because let's say you have boiling hot latkes, and you want to soak up some of the oil, so when you put it down on the plate, you put a paper towel down on the plate first. A lot of people do this. So they take the hot latkes right out of the pan, they put it down on the paper towel. That plate is not baleya from the latkes? Of course it is. Right, the oil drips through when it's hot and it goes right into the plate. The hefsek mappa doesn't help. A napkin's not going to help you. If it's totally in blia, putting a napkin, a piece of paper, something like that down, that's not going to do it. Now, if you put aluminum foil down, that might do it. Right, that might help because the blios won't go through the aluminum foil. It's kli mikli. If there's no spillage, right, kli mikli won't be baleya. And according to Rashi, just that it's a general, it's a type of kli that's used together with food, putting a napkin down doesn't change that. It doesn't change that. It's still the type of kli that you would use together with food. So I thought that eitzah is not a good eitzah at all. I didn't like that eitzah. The problem was, there was no good eitzah. As we learned through Tefilas Kelim, since I was a meshugel Dav Recher and this Shaila for a couple of weeks fighting with people about it, I'm going to show you through each halacha that we do why it's not a good eitzah for this particular Shaila. And it's a real, real problem. Yeah.
Does tinfoil consider kli suda? Like if you use it for like leftovers, you put it in there, then you heat it up.
Aluminum pan, you're saying?
Aluminum foil. Like anything just foil.
Foil is not a kli.
I mean, it's not even something that's used for a meal and it could be used, it doesn't matter, but it's not a kli.
It's not a kli. The aluminum pans are a kli. That we'll have to talk about. Yeah.
With regards to like the cookie jar, it's the top. So you say it's just to get rid of the outside elements. But
right.
So if you don't have that top, then the cookies will come stale.
Like from?
From the air, but it's still...
That's the outside elements.
It's needed, though.
Yeah, but it's not...
It's not like something's going to fall into it. That's not your concern. Your concern is more that it's going to stale and you're not going to have anything.
It doesn't help in the preparation of the food. It only helps in the preservation of the food. It doesn't help in the preparation of the eating. The two things of klei suda are during the mealtime and preparation. Preservation is klei otzar already. Right? So I think if its only function is preservation, I would think that it's not a problem. Yeah.
Why is the itzim not to tell like onats and places to tovum?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. We'll get that one too. That was, it's not a good itzah. No, it's not. That was a thought also. I don't think we ever changed anything here. I think they still sell all that stuff. I know that I mentioned it to Rabbi Marcus, and he brought it up at a Queens Vibe meeting, and they changed it in the candy stores in Queens, but we still haven't. We asked the Shaila to Rav Feivel Cohen. I emailed the VAD here. I emailed Rabbi Eisen, who runs the VAD, about this problem, and I didn't identify myself. And he like sent me, you look into Vilas Kalim, Ha'ara, whatever, you'll see there, it's okay. So I looked it up, and it was like, said exactly Fakeret. So then I emailed with my name, you know, Rabbi Beis Knesset, whatever. Then I got a phone call, and he said, oh, that's a really serious Shaila. We need to look into it. So then he went and he asked Rabbi Feivel Cohen, the father of the Chalkas Binyamin, Badei HaShulchan. Rabbi Feivel Cohen said, yeah, it's a Navla, you have to take care of that. So we haven't had a meeting since then. If someone would just serve some treifas in their store, we'd have a meeting, and we'd be able to discuss this issue also. Avera Lishma. Okay. So whatever the reason for that, there is a Hefsek Mappa, but does not work. Now, as we mentioned, things that does touch directly, like a toaster oven tray, not a toaster, but a toaster oven, you know, that has a door open and tray. So a lot of times you'll put the bread or the pizza bagels or whatever is directly down on the tray, and that would therefore be something that would require tefillas kelim. The racks of a grill. What about a corkscrew, can opener, those types of things? So those never touch the food, the chora, they're not used in contact with the food ever, and those do not require tefillas kelim. Right? So it's once you know the klalim, you can figure out all the particulars. Yeah?
Are you able to, like, let's say, like, you have a grill that you didn't tovo, whatever the, whatever they're called.
Right.
Are you able then to just cut off, like, the, top part and the bottom part of whatever the meat? Are you able to cut off people?
Oh, it doesn't ask for the food. Doesn't ask for the food.
Oh, no.
You're just not allowed to use the lechatchila, but it doesn't ask for the food. I should have mentioned that. If something needed tevila, you're not allowed to use the kli lechatchila. So let's say you're at someone's house and they say, like we said before, we never heard of this tevila skelem thing. It's crazy chumra that my son came home with, and you're eating, so you can't actually use the fork, the spoon, whatever to eat when they didn't tovel those things. The plate is probably not a problem for several reasons, but the fork and the spoon, that's a real issue, because that's using it. Now, if it was barbecued on the grill and that wasn't toveled, so by the time it gets to your plate, it's not on the grill anymore. Now, you should try to make sure it gets toveled for next time, but it doesn't ask for the food. It won't ask for the food. Last quick point: the third, we're up to the third clay suda issue, using it for other purposes. The Shach writes in Sifkat Nidzayin, says that if a kli was made to be clay suda, and you use it for other purposes, it does not require tevila. So if, let's say, something was made to be a kitchen knife, but you decide that you're going to use it to, come up with something creative here, to murder people with, so it's does not require tefilas kelim before you use it for other purposes. Now, it's not right. If you're going to ask the shayla, it's not abundantly clear what the shach means by that. What does he mean that it doesn't require tefilah? Does he mean that you never plan on using it for clay suda, and that's why it doesn't require tefilah? Then what's the chiddush? Meaning, obviously, tefilah for what? To leave it, doing nothing to. Like what? Or does he mean that, no, you're going to use it for clay suda once, you're just not going to use it for clay suda yet, and it, meaning you might use it occasionally, just not yet. Is this more like an arai type of thing, where derech arai, and saying against the Rama, that it would not require tevilas kelim? It's not 100% clear what the shach means by that. Again, usually it doesn't come up all that much. All right, Bez Hashem, tomorrow we'll get into food preparation and continue with the issues of clay suda. There is a 10-minute